going into a work session on Senate Bill 34. So could you give us kind of an update on... Oh, I'm sorry. Are we okay? Okay. Good.
Senate Bill 34 establishes an electronic base for information reported by pharmacies regarding dispensing of certain controlled substances to be housed at the State Board of Pharmacy. And we do have 9 amendments that have been drafted to the bill. Would you like me to go through them one by one now?
Yes. We will open a public hearing on amendment number 1.
-1 amendment adds the phrase drug-related to section 4, subsection 4B, before the word investigation to clarify that the data will not be used for anything other than the intended purposes. In addition, the amendment adds an immunity clause to protect those physicians who choose not to use the system to check on a patient's prescription.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move that -1 to...
We're in a public hearing.
No, we're in a work session.
You opened a public hearing.
No. Did I?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm closing whatever I thought I... And I'm opening a work session on amendment number 1, which is what I thought I already did. Okay. We're in a work session.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 34.
Okay. Senator Berger moves a -1 amendment to Senate Bill 34. Discussion?
Yes.
Yes.
I have an issue with it.
Okay.
How can we say that a pharmacist... Okay, this is how I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
A pharmacist or a practitioner who prescribes the drug may not be held liable for damages in any civil union on the basis that the pharmacist or practitioner did or did not request or obtain information from the database. To me, that...
Mr. Chair, is that the right line? I'm looking at 4B, which is pursuant to a valid court order.
34-1?
Well, I'm going by... I'm sorry.
I'm looking at pursuant to a valid court order issued at the request of a federal, state, or local law enforcement agency engaged in an authorized investigation involving a person to whom the requested drug-related information pertains.
Okay. Well, let's see. We were actually going by the effect of the amendment. We better back up here.
It's section 4, subsection 4B.
We're looking at amendment 34-1, correct?
Yes.
Which is found in section 4, subsection 4B.
And basically we're on page 2, line 20, after authorize.
Line 19.
Line 20, we're inserting drug-related, authorized
right.
Drug-related.
Right. Before information.
Investigation,
excuse me. Authorized drug-related investigation.
Right. I don't have a problem with that piece.
Okay.
It's after line 42 where we're inserting that a pharmacist or a practitioner isn't going to be held for damages in any civil action, whether they used or did not use information from the database.
Well, I'll ask Paige to come up, please. I understand that to mean that if they choose not to use the database, they're not going to be penalized for not using it, and if they do use it, they're not going to be penalized for using it unless they abuse it.
Yes, Senator Morissette and committee, I'm Paige Clark with the Board of Pharmacy, and that is my understanding, that the practitioners were interested in having language similar as exists in other states, where they would not be penalized for choosing not to use the system particularly, or for using the system, but particularly for not opting to do so.
Well, I'm thinking of the circumstance where they would
erroneously prescribe a medication. And this is saying whether they did or did not use the database, and this is removing damages in any civil action. So that's why I have a real issue with that, because you'd be getting off the hook for everything.
I think the intent was only with relation to whether they used the database or did not use the database, was the intent of the language.
Okay, let's clarify. What if a physician misprescribes right now? What's in they? There is a liability, right?
Indeed. That would be.
Okay. So if the circumstance that Senator Bonner Anderson mentions occurs right now, there's some kind of sanction, I imagine.
I would assume that would be the case, yes.
And so what this amendment is meant to do is only deal with whether or not they use the database.
Correct, Senator Morissette.
Now, is this worded clearly, do you think? I mean,
we need an attorney for that.
Pardon me?
I think we might need LC for that to clarify.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
Can you call?
Now, was this Charlie Cheek?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pharmacist prescribes controlled substance may not be held liable for damages in any civil action on the basis of. Okay, this, I don't see it as pertaining to whether or not they prescribed the correct medication. It's whether it, I think it's clear that it's whether or not they.
Senator, I believe it's whether or not they use the database.
I just want to have that clarified, because to me it could be interpreted that, I mean, it says they may not be held liable for damages in any civil action on the basis that they did or did not request information. So if they did not request information from the database, that means that if they didn't use it, they could prescribe wrong, and they could be. Anyway, we need to have that clarified.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I will close the work session on dash ones and open the work session on the dash twos. Pardon me?
Did you fill one out?
Oh, yes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move the dash twos.
Okay, wait until I get to it.
Mr. Chair, if when we move these, if we might refer to the line number,
okay.
I think it would be helpful.
Okay. You want to tell us about the dash twos, and we'll refer to the line number in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The dash two amendment adds one member of the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association to the list of members of the Electronic Prescription Drug Database Advisory Commission. So that's page 3, line 11.
Right.
Okay, page 3, line 11.
Well, yeah, actually line 11 just changes it from 13 to 14, and Mr. Chair, and then on line 25, we're adding optometric physicians.
And I believe it would change the number from 13 to 14.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're okay with that? Okay. Senator Montes Anderson moved the dash two amendments. Do I hear an objection? So moved. Close the public hearing on the dash twos and
work session
on dash twos and open a work session on the dash threes.
The dash three amendment prohibits the Board of Pharmacy from requiring physicians to pay a fee or assessment charge for the development, maintenance, or operation of the database, access to or use of the database, or activities of the advisory committee. That change is in section 6,
page 3.
Page 3, after line one.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I'm not able to support this amendment after previous testimony, which said that at least in, I think it was Kentucky, that had the longest pain management, that 90% of the providers were using 90% of the physicians were using the database. And I assume that that's what will happen in this state, too.
Okay. Further discussion? I don't have a problem with not moving this. The Board of... this is their position. This is their amendment. My feeling is that I agree with you. The large number of physicians that will use it, so I don't have a problem with remaining silent on that.
Mr. Chair, may I ask,
yes,
Senator Montanison, what is, do you feel that they should find some other way of funding?
I think the providers should be assessed a fee for using it. I think I'm not sure how the structure is, but I think whoever uses it should be assessed a fee to make the system work. So it would be pharmacists, I assume, and physicians and practitioners, nurse practitioners. And
so the objection is to requiring the physicians to have any kind of assessment.
Yeah, they may use it, but this is asking that they be exempt from being charged a fee, so it would only be the pharmacist and... Right.
Okay.
It prohibits the Board of Pharmacy.
The... Paige, would you please come up and explain the funding mechanism and when a fee may or may not be assessed in the future?
Yes, thank you, Senator Morissette and committee. The Board of Pharmacy doesn't have an overall objection to the physicians being excluded from requiring payment at this time because we have adequate, what we believe, federal funding available in grant form to get the program up and running, and also for additional grants down the road for a period of time. And we probably will end up revisiting the overall financing at a point down the road.
My feeling, I guess, is that when the time comes, and I jokingly said I would like to put a sunset on this because I know in 2 years after the physicians use this that they will be willing to do the fee. Now, there can be an amendment at that time. I don't necessarily, you know, this is at the request of the OMA, and I honor their request. I think in the long run it will not matter. Physicians are not prohibited from voluntarily supporting it, and I feel strongly that there will be a change of heart once it is in place. So I don't have a problem with this amendment. I don't think it's a valid amendment, but I don't have a problem with it. And it would, I'm not sure how much opposition the OMA will have to this whole program because they have to pay for something that's very good. I hate to talk about greedy doctors, but it doesn't make, to me, $10 a year or whatever is not a big deal. And the physician...
20, Senator. But
okay. 20. Maybe that is a big deal. Okay, I forgot. $20 is a big deal for physicians. Yeah. Right, okay. I guess I would just leave this in there and deal with it in 2 years when the time comes to do the to go another route. Are you okay with that?
I'm just not doing anything about it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, now that I've gone out on a limb and insulted the OMA. Sergeant at Arms? No. Do we have a motion?
No. Not for this one.
Okay. Okay. We'll close the work session on dash threes and may or may not come back to it. Okay, I'll open a work session on dash fours.
Now, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't think there's any pushback from this, so I'm just going to move that the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 34.
Okay. You want to talk about that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dash 4 amendment prohibits the use or collection of social security numbers for purposes related to the database.
Oh, Charlie's here.
Okay, let's finish this first. The motion is to approve the dash 4s. Motion by Senator Bridger. Discussion? Hearing none. So moved. We will close the work session on the dash 4s. Charlie Chief, thank you very, very much for being here. We will open the work session on the dash ones, and there was a question about the, well, I'll let Amanda Sanderson express her concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chief, for coming. On the dash one amendments, when I read that last sentence where the pharmacist or practitioner who prescribes a controlled substance may not be held liable for damages in any civil union on the basis that the pharmacist or practitioner did or did not request or obtain information from the database. My concern was that I wanted to make sure that this, if a practitioner didn't use the database and did or did use the database or didn't, and they just had prescribed the wrong prescription, I wanted to make sure that they would still be held liable.
Senator Morissette, Senator Morris Anderson, I think that it would still, in fact, be held liable under those circumstances. I think what this is designed at, the intent, and maybe we can massage it a little bit to make it more specific, but it was solely on the fact that they had or had not requested the information from the database. That there's a subsequent act if they prescribed a wrong drug. That's not based on getting the information or not getting the information. There's a subsequent act to that, which this, as I read it, does not remove their liability for that act.
Okay, so you feel this would be held up and not putting in the words solely on the basis?
I think it could be, but I think maybe if you're more comfortable, solely would maybe even make it clearer. It could. But as I read this, this is solely the wrong word. Only removing liability on the basis of requesting or not requesting the information from the database. That's not the same liability that would exist had they made an erroneous prescription, for example, that resulted in harm.
Well, I just want to make sure I got that on the record. I want to make sure that the intent here is based on the fact whether they use or not use the database, then they will certainly be held liable if there was any other pharmacist or physician would be held liable.
It's my opinion that would be under this current language that's the case, but on the other hand, maybe the addition of the word solely would make it clearer.
Where would we put solely?
Let's see. Not be held liable for damages in any civil action solely on the basis that the pharmacist.
Gotcha.
Or practitioner.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you very much. Okay. So, what's your pleasure on this amendment?
Well, the dash ones, certainly as far as adding drug-related, that's not a problem. So I just think it's the comfort level of Senator Mons Anderson on this. I'm not so sure that it reads that way, but if you feel like solely we'll change it, you have to go by the smart people.
Well, since it has to go over the House, you can maybe submit that amendment on the House side.
Well, the one to change that, to add that word.
To add that word.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm comfortable in passing it the way it is then.
Okay.
As long as we had on the record the intent.
Okay.
Okay.
So do we have a motion?
Chair,
yes.
I move that we move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 34.
Okay. Senator Berger moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 34. Objections? Seeing none, so move. We're up to dash fives now, aren't we?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The dash five amendment requires the State Board of Pharmacy to give patients whose personal information has been entered into the database the option to have all identifying information other than name be replaced by a personal identification number. This change would occur page one, line 22, the last word and would be removed, and then this provision of the amendment would be added after line 24.
Whose amendment was this?
Paige, would you come up here, please, for this? Okay, this was a concern of identification, privacy. One of the senators, two of the senators, had some concern about this. What's the implication of a personal identification number as an option with the Board of Pharmacy? How would that work?
Senator Morissette and committee, when a pharmacist fills a prescription, you walk in and you provide your prescription to them. There are certain pieces of information that are standard of practice to be provided. Name, address, date of birth, etc. Those are for correct identification of the patient. They're patient safety issues, and they're certainly standard of practice out there. That's what's normally done with a prescription, and that is exactly the same information that would be captured into this particular program. I believe that perhaps the comment about the use of part of a date of birth or something like that had taken place.
No, this came about before the one of the following amendments that may be in conflict with this. This was an idea that was discussed in committee, and I used the term a PIN. That's the wrong term, because a PIN is something that you assign to the number. An identification number would come from the Board of Pharmacy at a later date. The person who found themselves involved in this program may say, well, I don't want to be on this list. I would choose to have a number assigned to me that would be on the database, and that number would be uniquely my number. No other person would have that, and it would be up then, I understand, to the Board of Pharmacy, who administrates the program, to come up with a number that would be used then as an identification. And when that person went to the emergency room, and if they were conscious, they would have to tell them what their number was if they could remember, so the pharmacist could call in and find out if they were really in pain.
Senator, I believe it would probably add another layer of complication to what the professionals are trying to access here. And again, this is standard information that any healthcare practitioner uses for patient safety purposes, patient identification purposes. It's certainly standard information.
Now, while you're here, let's talk about another one that substitutes the year of birth rather than the date of birth. What?
That's the next amendment.
That's okay. Let's talk about this was another issue raised, that an individual said, I don't want my birth date listed. And so the suggestion by one of my colleagues was, why don't we just put the year in instead of the date and let that be sufficient? Tell us about that.
Yes, Senator and committee. Again, in standard of practice in filling a prescription for, again, patient safety reasons, for example, when a patient comes to a pharmacy counter to pick up their prescription, they are very commonly now asked, Mrs. Susan Jones and your date of birth, both pieces of information, to ensure that if there are two Susan Jones, for example, that are getting their prescriptions filled in that pharmacy, that the correct Susan Jones with the correct date of birth would get the correct prescription. The same would apply here. Those programs that we have become very familiar with across the nation find that those particular pieces of information are very helpful to the software companies who help to figure out and compile aliases and that type of thing as well within a program. So having those standard pieces of information are helpful to the program to run successfully.
There are three, Mr. Chair, there are three Lori Andersons in Gresham, and we've got mixed up one time.
Yeah.
So it's date of birth and...
We're on the dash fives.
Date of birth, I think, and not having a personal ID number, well, date of birth, I think, is extremely important.
Thank you, Senator Mona Sanderson. You're exactly right, and having been a pharmacist for many years and in this position, working with my staff at the pharmacy counter, it is absolutely standard to ask your name and your date of birth and be absolutely certain those are matched correctly at the pharmacy counter. It's imperative. It's a patient safety issue. And it's an issue in correctness of this data and usability of this data.
Okay, so as far as the privacy issue is concerned, if you get a prescription anywhere, you have that information at that particular pharmacy.
Correct, Dr. Morissette.
So we may not want to deal with the dash fives. I don't hear a motion on the dash fives. So we will skip the identification number. We'll close the work session on dash fives. And now the dash, we'll open the work session on dash sixes, and let's deal with that.
Dash 6 amendment requires pharmacies to report only a person's birth year and not their entire birth date to the State Board of Pharmacy when submitting information after dispensing a controlled substance.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, just to let you know, the one other Lori Anderson was born in the same year that I was.
Oh. That's your problem, Mr. Chair.
But yeah, not the same day.
Not the same day. So the date is important. Thank you very much. Okay. So we will close the public hearing, or the work session. Excuse me. So you weren't here to correct me, so Lori had to do that.
Oh, I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Sometimes leadership is a problem.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm so used to public hearings and not work sessions. We don't have enough work sessions. Okay, we're going to be dealing with the... What are we on now?
Dash sevens.
Okay, you want to read the dash
sevens. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The dash 7 amendment removes language in Senate Bill 34, which would allow the State Board of Pharmacy to share data with controlled substance reporting programs in other states. This change is made on page 2 by deleting everything from lines 26 through 33.
I need that explained to
okay.
me.
Okay. Paige, would you...
I'm not overly thrilled with that one, Mr. Chair.
Paige? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to rush you.
This has to do with the other states.
Yeah.
To a controlled substance reporting program of another state. I'm not sure what that...
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, there was quite a discussion among some of us. There was some objection to that because the one of the individuals felt that other states might not have the same standards. We didn't know enough about the other states in sharing the information, and I think there was even part of the privacy issue that came up. There was just some fear when you started spreading it out. On the other hand, people do travel quite a bit. And so I think that if you're traveling and give out of your medication, you're really in trouble as a person with a chronic
illness.
But,
so,
but the language being deleted basically says that, that the reporting system of the other state has to be of a of an equal standard to the one in the state of Oregon. So that that is considered.
No. Okay. Paige.
Yes, Senator Morissette and committee, not only is that true, that, that it has to be held to that highest standard, Oregon will end up having, through this process, the highest standard, which is excellent, number one. Number two, a point that bears consideration is the fact that this body has instituted a permanent commission, which will serve, of course, in an advisory capacity to the entity within the Board of Pharmacy running this. And I think that it is probably envisioned that that commission that, that contains members from the entire healthcare community, everyone, including the optometrists now, I believe, will determine if, when, and how any sharing would ever take place across state lines. Most states have dealt with this in rule and not in statute. The implications of dealing with this in statute are that we in Oregon may find ourselves in a less than desirable position for some federal funding if we choose to insert in statute that language that would prevent us from ever sharing information across state lines. The third thing to take into account is that very few states, only those states with fairly mature programs that are running, you know, that have all their bugs worked out and are working exceptionally well, are even mature enough to the point to be able to begin to develop the ability to share that information across state lines. California and Nevada would be an example of that. They are in discussion about how, if, and when they may be able to share that data back and forth. We would anticipate it will take us some time to get to the point that we are able to do so.
So, Mr. Chair, does that mean that you are removing line 27 and also A? Because if you remove it, if you go all the way up the top, it just says that this is what they may do. And so if you drop down to line 27, it says that they may report a controlled substance to another state if the confidentiality, security, and privacy standards of the requesting state determined by the Board of Pharmacy would be equivalent. And you're saying yours is the highest, so they would have to be as high as yours. But mm-hmm. if you what language are we removing?
You're removing that language.
We are removing it.
Yeah, we would with be the removing it. Yeah, the dash sevens would take us out of any state.
Would take it out of there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what. Okay, the intent of this amendment is to prohibit Oregon statutorily from sharing information with other states. That is the intent
right.
of this.
So that takes out 27, 28, 29, and 30.
Yeah,
through 33, actually.
All the way to 33?
Yeah. Now, are there, Ohio was used as an example of a state that does not share. There are other states that don't share then, right?
Very few few states, Senator, are sharing or are gearing up to share their information. It is not my understanding that Ohio specifically in statute says they will not share information. I believe it says they will share information if the standards are deemed to be
okay.
acceptable.
Okay. Now, what? At what point in the development of this program would we be likely, would the board, the advisory board, be likely to consider the possibility, the feasibility of sharing? What would be the timeline, do you think?
Senator, that would just be my opinion. Okay. And I would say probably at the 3 to 4 year mark.
So up until a conscious decision would be made, a recommendation by a board, which could take up 2 to 3 to 4 years, if there would be no sharing. This is not something that would start out. Okay, this is not something that would be implemented at the beginning of the program. This is something that would be implemented now. Okay. And the fact that it says up to the standard, so we would have an obligation to look at the standards that they operate under to see if they are at least comparable to ours or better.
Correct, Senator.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Let me clarify. You want all of this taken out?
No.
No.
Someone did.
I don't.
I'm trying to get on your position. I thought that would be a strange position, but that's all right. I needed to ask.
Okay. What I mentioned today in caucus when I distributed this is that these are 9 amendments that have been drafted that dealt with objections that various individuals had to the program, and that we would look at each of them and consider each of them. And some of them are contradictory, so obviously we could not possibly pass all 9 of them because some of them contradict each other. Now, okay, so unless I hear a motion, we will close the work session on -7, and we will move to -8. Then we'll come back and let you know where we were in the first one.
Okay.
Can I go with -9 as well?
Yes, the
-8 and the -9 are similar amendments. -8 specifies that data that identifies a patient can only be retained for 2 years from the date of dispensing, allowing only the date of birth, gender, and digit zip code to be retained for research or educational purposes. Data that identify a practitioner drug outlet may be retained for only 2 years from the date of dispensing, except that the zip code may be retained for research or educational purposes. The -9 amendment is the same thing, but it sets a 1-year limit on the length of time information could be retained in the database.
Thank you. Now, that again was a discussion that an individual had in our group meeting, our caucus. I did receive an email which I didn't, I don't know if I brought it with me. Would you please come up, Paige, and you follow through on this? I did give a copy of that to the individual who objected to it. I gave them the copy this morning. I thought I had an extra copy. Could you just address that issue?
Yes, Senator. I apologize. I don't have an extra copy with me either, but I can certainly share with you the information that we learned from those states who have fairly mature, well-running programs. The majority of the states are at a 3-year retention. Several states are at 2 years. There is no state that is at 1 year. And the reason being, the several companies that help to adjudicate the data and format the data, by the time all of that is done, you end up with about 10 months and 3 weeks of data. Which, to be fair, we don't know if that's an adequate window of time. It's not being done anywhere else. It might be, but I think that those experts around the nation are advising us strongly to consider the 2-year as a good option,
okay,
knowing that that's workable.
Now, would you explain what happens when a person's information is taken off of the database?
Yes.
After 2 years, unless what?
At the 2-year mark, a person's personal identification with that piece of data would be removed. The data itself, de-identified from the patient, would remain, and that would be for purposes of state public health, etc. So for that period of time, 2 years, let's say, that information would be capturable in the system.
Well, I don't understand what would prompt a name to be removed. The only way a name would be removed if they no longer got a prescription for a particular drug. So the name is removed. The week after it's removed, they go in and get a prescription for that particular drug, and the name is back on the database, right?
That would be correct, Senator.
Yeah, okay. So there are some names that legitimately are for obviously the right reason to be removed, because a person could move out of the state, the person could die, and so on.
Or get well.
Okay, and so but if there was ever a need to get any of those classes again, the name would be back on the database, and there would be
Correct, Senator, associated with the new prescription.
Now, would the name, it would be 2 years. What if they didn't get that particular drug? When would they not have to get that drug for the name to be removed? If they didn't get it at 3 months, 1 year and 9 months was the last time they got the drug?
Then I would assume that at 1 year and 9 months, the data associated with having that particular prescription filled would still be in the system.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then if they get a different prescription, it's by date of fill of the prescription.
Oh, okay, it's 2 years from the last date of fill.
By the date of fill of the prescription.
Okay, 2 years from the last date of fill. Okay. For that particular prescription.
Right.
However, a different prescription that requires them to be on the database might keep them. Okay.
But not for the one drug.
Not for the one drug, right. And so the normal way that the name would be removed, the person moved, they got well, they passed away or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mr. Chair? Yeah. What, if the way it's written now, without that amendment, what happens to a name?
Thank you for asking that. What would happen is if a prescription is filled now, then under rule, the Board of Pharmacy and the commission that has been set forth will sit down and iron out, well, should we do it at 2 years? Should we purge at 3 years? At what point do we purge that data? That's how that is intended to be handled.
Well, was that your question?
Yeah. I figured the way it's written now, rather than us trying to micromanage.
Oh, excuse me. I thought your question was, and this is a question I want to ask, and what happens right now?
Currently, right now, it is intended that the Board of Pharmacy entity and that the commission will evaluate this.
No. We don't have a database right now.
Oh.
How long do you keep my record?
How long does the pharmacy keep your record?
Yes, how long does the pharmacy keep? All of the Safeway stores in the state of Oregon have my record.
Yes, we're required to do so 3 years.
3 years.
Indeed.
Is it a country western?
I'm looking at my board members behind me.
So, okay, after 3 years, my record disappears.
From Safeway. Actually, it's kept, but it's not probably currently on the database. Excuse me. Better answer. Depends on the pharmacy.
With you
3 years is
well, no, but I keep
it forever.
Forever. But I guess the question is right now that the name remains in the database right now, in the existing database. And if I want to find out, you know, I mean, we're talking privacy concerns and so on, but so there's not a whole lot of difference between what we're at. Actually, we're looking at a 2 year time period. Now, this is in addition to the bill because the original bill said that would be the job of the commission, but this is a safeguard that some individuals wanted to have in the bill. And I don't see that as being an unreasonable safeguard to say this is something that we will put in the bill. If the commission wants to make that or any other changes, they can recommend changes to the next legislative session, obviously. And that's why I'm not concerned about the physicians not being in the bill, because that can be changed at another session. And I personally would rather have them in the bill to start with, because I honor their integrity. Is that the right word?
Talking about her?
Mr. Chair, I think the bill is fine as is, and the reason that I think it is that the amendment is for 2 years, and quite frankly, if I served on their commission, I would vote for 3.
Yeah, okay.
So I think to let them decide...
Okay.
Whether it's going to be 2 or 3, because I would really object to 1 or 2. So,
yeah. Mr. Chair, I would agree with that.
And I would, too.
I would reject the 8s and 9s.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right. Yes.
The 9's 1 year.
And the 9th one is 1 year. No, I would
Senator
reject Lyons that.
Added.
I agree.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair,
so we'll close the public hearing.
We're still in work session.
No, we're closed the work session. Are we on, did we, the work session was on the on the 8th. Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on the 8th, and we're not going to go into a work session on the 9th.
So, Mr. Chair, you adopted the 1s, 2s, and 4s?
Right.
Funny. No, not yet.
Cool.
I want to go back to... Was it the second amendment that...
It was...
The Board of...
Dash threes.
Okay. Let me open the work session on the dash threes one more time. You weren't here at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the discussion had to do with... Oh, well, Senator Montes Anderson vehemently objected to that and felt that they should... Given that statistically 95% of them will be participating in 2 years, that this should not be a problem.
Well, the reason is they aren't. There isn't going to be a fee, at this point. It's all under grants, and so there's really no. There won't be a fee until the grants run out or whatever, and then what the board will come back when they have to do a fee, they're going to have to come before the legislature anyway down the road when fees, I assume,
yeah,
when fees
right.
happen. So that's when the Board of Medical Examiners can come with their amendment regarding and see, we'll then have more data on who's using it. And so that was the only reason. Not that I don't necessarily think they should be charged or not. I don't think we have enough information at this point in time because they will not... They're under grants right now.
Well, there will be no fee assessments in the foreseeable future.
At least
2 years, maybe longer.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Conversations we've had on this very subject, and I think I'm going to agree with Senator Montes Anderson, not that I'm advocating for charging anybody a fee, but my thought on this was that 2 years from now, when we come back here, we can look at the usage and base the fees to run the program on usage, quite simply. If it's all pharmacists using it, then the pharmacists pay for it. That sort of, I mean, that's...
That's right.
Yeah.
That's where I'm coming from.
Okay. I will close the work session on Amendment 3.
Yes.
Okay. And we will open a work session on Senate Bill 34 as amended.
Mr. Chair.
No.
We send it?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 34 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation and rescinding the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
No, wait a minute. We can't rescind that. The President.
Requesting. You were supposed to make that happen.
Requesting the President of the Senate.
Rescind the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
I did have a conversation with the President's office and was assured that that was okay.
Okay. Good job.
I need clarified for the record which amendments. I think it's 1, 2, and 4.
Excuse me. Amendments with amended with dash 1, 2, and 4.
And that's it?
That's it.
That's it.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Excuse.
Senator George, excuse. Somebody is.
Aye. Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Morissette?
Aye. Okay. We have a constitutional majority, and Senator Cruz and I will carry the bill. Anyway.
It's a good day.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So, welcome to the committee hearing.
I'm sorry, Ms. Chair. We were doing some leadership things that took me away. So.
Okay. I thought this was the most important thing on your agenda.
It was. It was. But then there's this
I know,
a couple
I
bills in the House and some minor things.
Okay, we are going to hear, we're going to start with, is there any compelling reason why we don't start with the order that we have? Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 206.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 206 requires that the examination for licensure as a naturopathic physician includes sections on basic sciences and clinical sciences and other subjects required by the Board of Naturopathic Examiners by rule.
Okay. Thank you. Rick Morelli and Anna Walsh. Anna Walsh. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Morissette, Senator Moniz Anderson, Senator Verger, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. As you know, this OB&E-sponsored bill is intended to update and clarify the language in ORS 685-60, 685-70, 80, 100, 102, 104, and 170, and as so, it's considered a housekeeping bill. The amendment to 685-60 and 685-80 is to update the language to qualify for examination. By removing the list of specific educational requirements and allowing any additional examinations to be determined by the board. We did have a discussion about this last time, and we're happy to answer any questions about that. The amendment to 685-70 primarily requires an earlier submission for application. The previous requirement was 10 days. We're now asking for 20 days. The amendments to 685-100 to 102, 104, and 107 amends amendments clarify the licensing requirements, the renewal fees, and changes the title of our administrator from secretary to executive director, which more accurately describes the scope of this position's responsibility. I respectfully request approval of these amendments, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Ms. Walsh.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Ann Walsh, Senator Morissette, Senator Moniz Anderson, and Senator Verger. I'm here to, as the director of the board, to support the amendments to Senate Bill 206 and to answer any questions that may arise. Senator Moniz Anderson and I had a conversation yesterday regarding a concern with the addition of basic science and clinical science to the language as to whether or not it was necessary to the intent of the examination and the licensing requirements. I then, at your suggestion and approval, met with Charlie Cheek to discuss how we actually came to that language to start with, since he and I worked together on this bill last April. That was a long time ago for my memory, which hardly remembers what I did last week. But we looked through his files and we discussed it, and I think we agreed that there wasn't really anything in writing that gave us an answer to how that determination came. So what we then did was went and we looked at some of the examination requirements for other health professional licensing boards and to see whether or not those requirements were in statute or whether they're in rule. And some of them, nursing and board of medical examiners, refer all of that educational requirement to rule. The chiropractic board is the other extreme. They had the whole laundry list of everything. Optometry board had some in statute with a reference to refer to the rule for the balance of that information. And dentistry said didn't refer to the rule, but they, I can't remember what faculty any subject pertaining to dental science. So after talking with Charlie and looking at that, he said there's not really any one right way to deal with that. And so I believe that leaving basic science and clinical science in is not a problem to the fact that we have also have in, the authority to require more by rule is in that statute.
Okay. Other, any questions? So I will, others wishing to testify. Seeing no others wishing to testify, I'll close the public hearing. And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 206.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Mona Sanderson moves Senate Bill 206 and the chair are to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Would you call the roll, please? Excused.
Senator Mondin-Davidson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Excused.
Chair Morissette?
Aye. Okay, the bill will pass to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Cruz will carry the bill. Unless somebody else wants to carry it. Senator Cruz gets the honor. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 208.
Senate Bill 208 allows the Board of Naturopathic Examiners to place limitations on the license of a naturopathic practitioner as requested by an applicant or licensee. It exempts naturopathic physicians licensed in other jurisdictions from licensure requirements under certain conditions.
Thank you. You have the pleasure.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Okay, Rick Minnelli and Ann Walsh, would you please continue your testimony? Introduce yourself again, please.
Thank you. I'm Rick Marinelli. I'm the chair of the Oregon Board of Naturopathic Examiners. Okay. Chair Morissette, Vice Chair Cruz, Senator Mona Sanderson, and Berger, thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. This bill is sponsored by the OB&E in order to allow physicians or applicants for licensure to voluntarily request license limitation. This has come about at the request of some licensees or potential licensees who have various disabilities who wanted to have their license voluntarily limited. It also allows for certain physicians licensed in other jurisdictions to be exempted on a temporary basis for licensure requirements in Oregon, primarily to teach. This is a common situation with visiting professors or visiting educators who are in active practice in other states who come for temporary assignments to teach. This particular bill is similar to the bill that the Board of Medical Examiners has to allow visiting professors and faculty to teach on a temporary basis, although ours is somewhat more restrictive. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I just have one
question.
Well, I guess that I'm a little confused. Yours is like for 15 days.
Yes, Senator, that's true.
So if I am licensed in Idaho and I come to teach for 15 days, I would have to have a license in Oregon? A temporary license?
Chair Morissette, Vice Chair Cruz, Senator Verger. No, you would not have to, and that's why this bill has been introduced. If you were coming from Idaho to teach for a period less than 15 days, you would not be required to have licensure. In fact, we encourage visiting faculty to come and to share their expertise. However, this bill only allows for that 15 days. We feel that that's an adequate time for visiting faculty to teach on a temporary basis. If they wanted to take up further residence or wanted to teach on a more extended basis, then we would ask for them to apply for licensure.
And follow up?
Yes.
And then under what circumstances would I want to request a temporary license other than coming from out of state? I'm in state, and I believe I understood you to say that other people might have reasons to want a temporary license.
Senator Berger, we do not have any thing in our statute that allows for temporary licensure. This particular bill allows for a temporary assignment, which would allow the physician who is licensed in another jurisdiction with similar qualifications and jurisdictions as Oregon to practice and teach on a temporary basis. However, we do not have in our statute a temporary licensure. This is merely a temporary assignment that allows them to function for that purpose of teaching.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to get it clarified. I thought you said there's another group. You said something about disabilities.
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger. Yes, there's two components to this bill. The first part of the bill allows for physicians applying for licensure or physicians who are already licensed to have a voluntary limitation on their licensure. For example, we had a future applicant who was blind, and she came to us and asked if there was any means for her to have a voluntary limitation on her license. And since we didn't have that, we thought that that was a reasonable request and could see how somebody, perhaps in her case who was blind, may want to exempt her licensure from doing exempt herself from doing, say, physical examination, which she would have difficulty doing. Perhaps she could function in a lesser capacity as a consultant or somebody who only does certain things that she felt and we felt competent for her to do. That's how the voluntary limitation of practice came about.
Any other, thank you very much, any other professions have this similar kind of limitations, voluntary?
Yes, for the record, my name is Ann Walsh. I'm the executive director for the board. Senator Morissette and members of the committee, the Board of Medical Examiners actually has the license limitation, and we took the language from their statute and used it in determining how to establish this ability to limit a license without actually having to do any kind of formal discipline on a practitioner's license. And that's where that came from.
Senator Berger.
Mr. Chair, the difference in that is that the medical examiners are regulatory and they are separate from the board. For instance, they're not on the OMA board. Or the nurses. This is all the authority within the board to determine that.
May I?
Yes.
True, but this would be totally voluntary. It would be upon a request of a naturopath or somebody seeking license to have to impose, ask for the an imposition of their license based on what they thought they would do, and then the board would just acquiesce to it. The only way the board has of doing that now is through kind of a punitive disciplinary procedure, which doesn't necessarily look good. This would be a way to allow a limited scope of practice in a more affirmative approach, if I got this right.
That's perfectly correct.
Yeah. I was going to raise the question of the only other way would be through discipline. If you found someone who, for instance, the person who was blind may not be able to function, and so there would have to be some action.
That's true, Senator Morissette, and as Vice Chair Cruz said, is that it puts it in the positive as opposed to imposing a disciplinary action, which then is a public record, and it wouldn't necessarily reflect well on the licensee, where if they voluntarily limit, then they're practicing reasonably and safely and within their competency level.
I think, though, Mr. Chair, what if I'm understanding Senator Verger's comments, if we have a situation where you would want to protect the naturopath over the safety of the patient. And I think that we need to just put on the record that for liability reasons, I would think that a temporary license would not be issued unless the board felt, the naturopaths on the board felt, that there would be no liability in granting this person a temporary license.
Chair Morissette, Senator Moss Anderson, that's perfectly correct. The board, if there's an issue of competency or some malfeasance or other kind of action that would require limitation of licensure, the board actively engages in those pursuits. There are those situations, and as most licensing boards do, that if there are issues of competency and public safety, then a licensee may be limited. I think this would occur even with somebody potentially who was applying for voluntary limitation of licensure for, say, maybe some lesser degree that the board felt that that wasn't adequate, could further limit it and engage into some sort of discussion and agreement with the licensee so that they would maybe have a greater degree of limitation than they thought was appropriate. Yet it could still be positive.
I guess I just looked at it as I looked at this bill, and what I saw was if you've got a practitioner who maybe their situation has changed and they don't feel they can do full scope of their practice and would like to be able to limit it, but currently the only way they can do that is going through a disciplinary process, they may be disinclined to do that. Whereas if they have a way that's affirmative to move in that direction, it might engender them to seek that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I looked at it differently. I looked at it that if there's a practitioner and they're in trouble, and it's easier, perhaps, to limit their scope than to discipline them. I'm not sure that I like this approach. I think it's a very softball approach, and I think if a person needs to be disciplined, they need to be disciplined, and the board has to do that, and you might limit their license as a part of that disciplinary action, but I like the transparency of it. I think this is, personally, I just don't care for this approach.
Yes, did you?
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger. I believe that there's two parts to, what your concern is. And the first part is that the board would not allow a practitioner to jeopardize public safety by practicing under any conditions if they are not competent. What this allows is the practitioner who maybe is hearing impaired to come to the board and say, I really need to record all of my conversations with my patients so I can have them transcribed, so I can understand what I'm doing for my patient. It will allow us to limit their license so that that is required as part of their practice without it being a public disciplinary action, which the board would have to come to if a patient came to us and said, my doctor is recording everything we say. That would be a concern that the board might have to address in a disciplinary manner if we didn't know that the practitioner actually had a reason for doing that.
Well, and the example you used of a blind
right.
person, and I could see where, I don't know if discipline then would be the right word. If a person is unable through a handicap situation to perform the duty, you would limit their license. Is that a discipline or not?
Currently, it would be required discipline to limit somebody's license. The board has no authority to allow them to voluntarily limit their license, their practice.
Okay.
Any
okay.
action that limits an MD's license at this
okay.
time has to be disciplinary.
Okay. So then let me try it again.
Okay.
Through no fault of their own, they can't perform to the full capacity. So if they request a limited license, then that doesn't reflect on their honesty or any other thing. They're not being. It's not a discipline problem. The word discipline is unfortunate because if a person's license is limited because they are unable to perform, that's justified, but I don't see it as a discipline. I see it as another adjustment or something. But anyway, this avoids all of that, and the person says, I want a limited license because I can't perform fully, and so please allow me to do that without having to go through the other process, which does come under the head of a discipline.
Yes.
So they're, you know, the discipline thing is on their file somewhere where it shouldn't be.
Chair Morissette, the limitation does not necessarily mean that that is not transparent. The limitation would be known to any patients going into that doctor's office. We are not promoting allowing practitioners to practice with limitations without that being absolutely clear to the patients going into
I understand
that.
Your intent, okay. But I'm looking at the bill. Your intent could be absolutely to help people that have some kind of disability.
Maybe
but this bill says that it would allow the board to place limits on a licensee without formal disciplinary action in cases where a licensee requests a limitation on their practice. So if I'm in trouble and I don't want any disciplinary action or I don't want to be written up in the newspaper, then I just ask you to limit my practice. And that, this bill allows you to do that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, I'm thinking of someone who has a alcohol problem and went into rehab, knows he can't. He then comes before the board or drug abuse and is in rehab and wants a limit on the license. I don't know if that would be a situation where you
Senator Morissette, Senator Moniz, Anderson, and Senator Verger, that would be discipline. That would not be the license limitation is not to avoid responsibility for actions in a practice, which would be held differently than requesting a limitation to the practice of somebody who's got a disability of sorts. So
I just see, Mr. Chair, a discrepancy in the language of the bill and their intent. I can understand your intent exactly, but I just think that the bill it gives you far more flexibility than that.
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger, I would anticipate that with the latitude that this may give us, and I appreciate your questions and concerns, Senator Verger, and I agree with you that the board could promulgate rules specifically around this to make it to have greater clarity about this voluntary licensure or voluntary limitation. I agree that I could see how someone may come and try to avoid discipline through voluntary limitation. However, I don't anticipate that the board, at least our present board, would cater to that sort of activity.
Well, the only problem with that is that we have an aversion to promulgating rules to do something that should be in the statute.
No. Mr. Chair, in number 3 it says the board may refuse to grant or may revoke an exemption. And is this exemption referring to the temporary?
So
it's the very last.
In other words, if they're trying to get out of a discipline and want a limitation, you have an option.
The board has the authority to maintain discipline.
Yeah. Okay. Other concerns? Thank you. Yeah. Rick Lee, would you come up, please? And we'll come back to you before we do anything. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hello. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Rick Lee. I'm here today because when I read Senate Bill 208, I was not sure the scope of what the language meant, and Senator Verger raised the very issue that I had and why I have appeared here to testify. For clarification, I know disability is being used as the example. Is that the only reason a license can be limited, or will it apply to other cases or situations? For example, could a naturopath request his license to be limited where he does not do homeopathy or want to prescribe prescription drugs? And if that's the case, I really have an objective to it because there is a profession that has branched out in different directions, and if a person is qualified, educated, and able to practice that profession, then they should do so. If we're just talking about disabled individuals, and Senator Berger's concerns are addressed, then I don't have a problem with Senate Bill 208.
Senator Berger, did you have anything else to add to that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just worry about voting for a bill that I don't wouldn't worry about voting for what they've just told me, but I worry about a bill that says something else to me that's different, and I don't know just exactly how to fix that, but.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, Senator Berger, let me see if I can get to the gist of what I think your concern is in my own mind.
Okay.
What you're thinking is you don't want this to be a process where somebody may be in violation and to where they were going to be facing disciplinary action and then use this as a way to limit their scope without going through the disciplinary action.
And they can request the board to please limit their.
So
process.
It's like a plea bargain.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That could be fixed.
Do you have a no plea bargaining clause?
Well, I understand her concern, but it could be fixed to say you can't do that. But
well, okay.
Well, I mean, we have time. Can't have a limitation of a license for a disciplinary reason.
Okay, we can, if we want to work on this bill, we can do that. I mean, and I would like to have your comfort level up to.
Mr. Chair, if you have enough votes to move it out of the committee, I'll be a no, but that's all right. I mean,
well, no, it's more than that. I think you're raising a point that has merit, and my feeling is it's better to take care of concerns like this before we move the bill than after we move the bill. So, and I'm wondering if you have any ideas on language on this.
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, I do. I think that at the end of Section 2, if we add a clause that states, this section shall not apply to any licensee under investigation or present disciplinary action by the board.
Does that take care of that for you?
I mean, that's it. It just makes it very transparent that you're not playing some kind of shell game with the public about your profession. I don't believe you are. Please believe that. I just think that the way the bill reads, it just, someone can look at it and say, aha. So.
You know, and I hadn't read that, Mr. Chair, but.
Thank you, Senator Morissette, Chair Morissette. Once again, my question and concern is this limit of licensing limited to just disabled individuals?
Mm-mm.
Well,
anybody who requests.
Would you address that, please?
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, thank you. Yes, my understanding is that that first of all, one would have to be a licensee for this to apply to them.
Okay.
And secondly, is that it wouldn't necessarily have to be due to a direct disability. If some individual, and I think about medical doctors who are surgeons who decide they don't want to do surgery, they can voluntarily limit their license, say, I don't do surgery anymore.
We had a testimony when we met last on brain injury, and there was a physician who gave up practicing surgery because of the condition. I don't know if she gave up medicine entirely, but that was an example where she limited her license. Now, I don't know officially. That's an interesting point. Would the OMA step in and limit officially a license of an individual who decided they could no longer practice a particular procedure?
Chair Morissette, the Board of Medical Examiners does indeed have that in their statute 677-132, limited license. And there are quite a few different categories of limited licensure under their statute.
Okay.
For all sorts of things, visiting professors, students, those who are impaired, disabilities, etc. And this is small in comparison. We just want to have the ability to limit those who, you know, without disciplinary action, if it is appropriate.
Okay, good. Other questions? No other questions. Thank you very much. And we will close the public hearing, and you will get an amendment to us, and we will reconsider. Okay, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 209.
Bill 209 modifies qualification for certain members of the Council on Naturopathic Physicians Formulary.
We have a list.
This will go quick.
Okay. Oh, you're still there.
Can we leave?
Okay. Very good. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Chair Morissette, Vice Chair Cruz, Senators Berger and Monis Anderson. My name is Rick Marinelli, and I'm the Chair of the Oregon Board of Naturopathic Examiners. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. The OB&E has sponsored Senate Bill 209 for a very simple reason. We have been having great difficulty in fulfilling the requirements for membership on the Council of the Naturopathic Physicians Formulary. By statute, it requires 2 of the 7 members to have an advanced degree either in pharmacology or in pharmacognosy. It may or may not surprise you that pharmacognosists are practically extinct. I think there are two in the West. We've had both of them on our council, but they are the last of a breed. In fact, even pharmacologists are becoming very rare. So we would like you to consider bringing this to the fore for passage, so that we can amend this bill to allow these two additional members to have an advanced degree in any medical or pharmaceutical science.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Cruz.
I like to try to get in at least one learning moment each day. So what's a pharmacognosist?
Chair Morissette, Vice Chair Cruz, thank you for that question. A pharmacognosist is one who studies plant medicines that are turned into drugs. And because of the history of naturopathic medicine, where we have relied on predominantly plant medicines, this has been seen as an important function and role. And in fact, it still is. It might surprise you to know that that's still a very significant majority of pharmaceutical drugs are actually drugs of natural origin. They're either directly derived from plants or plant substances, or they're somewhat modified. However, the actual science of the discipline of pharmacognosy is disappearing, because now it's under pharmaceutical science or doctor of pharmacy sciences or some similar medical degree.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay. Thank you. Kevin Wilson. Well, I've noticed you back there shaking your head this way and that way. And
I just have a problem.
Go to the pharmacognosist.
Senator Morissette, members of the committee. I'm the chair of the Formulary Council.
Introduce yourself.
Yes, Dr. Kevin Wilson.
Thank you.
I'm the chair of the Formulary Council for the OB&E, and we've not had a real full quorum or a full population of the council since I've been the chair or on the committee, or on the council, I should say, and this would just allow us to fully populate the council, which would be a great service to not only our work, but the profession and the public of Oregon. And as Dr. Marinelli said, pharmacognosists are just really don't exist anymore. The only one we know of in the greater Portland area has served and doesn't want to serve anymore and doesn't even practice his science anymore. So And pharmacognosy is still covered in botanical medicine at the naturopathic schools, where they're taught to identify crude plant drugs and other things, but it's really not essential for the state to get into that at this point, other than so by having people of other professions, higher degrees, doctors of pharmacy, pharmacologists, we can fully do our job.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I was actually called an assistant biologist in the pharmacology department at University of Arizona for a couple of years. Huh. I dealt with plants, and we were working on research for cancer drugs. We were testing all different kinds of plants that came in from all over the world in cancer research. And so we had some pharmacologists there, but they are, that this was back in the early 70s, and it was a rare breed then also.
Yes, it's true.
Okay.
So.
Any other questions?
Chair,
yes.
Very straightforward.
Okay. Yeah, let's just move on. Okay, we'll close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 209.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 209 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Any comments, concerns? Hearing none. So moved. And Senator Lori Moniz Anderson will carry the bill because she knows
has experience
all about it. She can answer any question. I was going to say, if I had to carry it.
Yeah, that's a big step right there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we will hear our last bill of the day. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 620. And Phil Donovan and Dr. Wilson. Give us a rundown there.
Chair, Senate Bill 620 defines naturopathic physician. It also specifies that naturopathic physicians can submit reports to the state health officer regarding the abilities of a person with a mental or physical condition or impairment to safely operate a motor vehicle.
Okay.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present on behalf of the Oregon Association of Naturopathic Physicians. My name is Phil Donovan, Government Affairs Representative. Our association represents over 200 naturopathic physicians across the state of Oregon. And just before the legislative session began, one of our member physicians was treating a patient, and she was asked to sign a medical impairment form for the Department of Motor Vehicles. Upon closer examination of the form, she realized that the Department of Transportation's rules only reference the statutes for medical doctors and did not recognize that naturopathic physicians or primary physicians, primary care physicians for thousands of Oregonians. So this issue was brought to my attention, and this raised a couple of issues. First, as you all know, I'm new representing the association, so I began to review the statutes governing naturopathic medicine. And what I found is there is no definition of a naturopathic physician. Now, if you look at the statutes for other healthcare professionals, you come to realize that most have some form of a basic definition. You take, for example, ORS 677.010. This defines physician as any person who holds a degree of doctor of medicine or a doctor of osteopathy. So to bring naturopathic statutes in line with other healthcare professions, Section 1 of this legislation adds a definition for naturopathic physician as someone who holds a degree of doctor of naturopathic medicine and is licensed by the state of Oregon. It's very straightforward, as are most of the other statutes governing healthcare professions. Second, the Department of Transportation relies on ORS 677.010 to define physician for the purposes of filing reports on impairment. Now, that same Department of Transportation statute also allows nurse practitioners and physician's assistants to do the same. So the Department of Transportation offered to make a change by rule, but frankly, we saw that the legislative session was on the near horizon, and since it's already defined in statute, we felt like it was most appropriate to do it via legislation. So if you look at Section 2, subsection 5 of the bill, it expands the department of definition of physician to include a person who holds a degree of naturopathic medicine and is licensed in Oregon. And I think it's important to note that the definitions that you find in this legislation are solely pertinent to the Department of Transportation, that is, particular sections 2 and 3. So we respectfully request your support for this legislation. I think it's pretty straightforward. We've spoken with the Department of Transportation. They do not have objections to this legislation. With me is Dr. Kevin Wilson, who has training experience in treating people, and I think he can help illuminate the circumstances of why this bill came forward.
Introduce yourself again, please, yes. For the record.
I'm Dr. Kevin Wilson. I'm also the legislative chair for the Oregon Association of Naturopathic Physicians. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 620. Over the years, I've been practicing for 23 years, we keep running into minor glitches with different state agencies with regard to the wording of the statutes and whether or not we're allowed to do different things. Previously, we had problems with the Department of Motor Vehicles relative to handicapped parking permits. That was able to be resolved simply by a rules change. The Department of Education a few years ago decided that we couldn't do school physicals, and we had to pass a bill to get that clarified and get us on that one. So once again, this seems to be sort of a housekeeping bill in some respects. I think it's important that there's uniformity of language across the statutes. When I was on the board of naturopathic examiners, that was our goal always, was just to make our statute as much like all the other medical professionals' statutes as possible. And I think this does that for us quite well. And it seems very straightforward and doesn't change our scope of practice. It just clarifies it for, once again, another state agency and the public.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Virgin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you tell me what medical profession, which doctors? Is it family practice? Is it general practice? What am I trying to, there's another term I'm trying to reach for here. Who would you best equate yourself to as far as what you do in your general everyday practice?
Senator Morissette, Senator Verger, thanks for the question. I see myself primarily as a general practice physician. I see everyone from little kids to older folks to people who have been hurt on the job to motor vehicle accident patients. So I treat people across the board within my skill set. I certainly don't do things. I don't do much minor surgery because I never felt all that competent at it, and yet other of my colleagues do a lot of that. So, you know, I am a general practitioner in my own mind.
A follow-up, Mr. Yeah. Chair? You can have test for your patients? You're not limited in what kind of tests you can have?
That's correct, Senator. We do all kinds of diagnostic imaging, all lab work. I have Quest Labs come to my office twice a day picking up blood samples and throat cultures, et cetera.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions?
No. Okay.
We will close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 620.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 620 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 620 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing no discussion, would you call the roll, please?
Senator
Mona
Davidson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator George?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. The bill passes to the floor, and Senator Virger, would you be good enough to carry this?
Sure, we have
okay.
to.
Good, thank you. Then we all have an equal load to carry here. Good. Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. It's been a pleasure. We are adjourned.